At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu. At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Today on The Grave Talks, strange paranormal realities in the everyday world. A conversation with author Andy Thomas. Every day, ordinary people experience things that defy logic, fleeting moments that leave them questioning everything they know about reality. A husband haunted by the ghost of his wife's first love. A police officer chasing glowing orbs across empty country roads. A soldier pulled back from the brink of death by what can only be described as an out-of-body intervention. In his new book, Strange: Paranormal Realities in the Everyday World, renowned author and investigator Andy Thomas pulls back the curtain on these extraordinary encounters, examining stories that skeptics dismiss, but witnesses cannot deny. Today, Andy joins us to explore the patterns hidden within the unexplained. Are these experiences simply folklore and coincidence, or are they evidence of something far larger at work? Get ready to step beyond the boundaries of the ordinary into a world that is, in every sense of the word, strange. So, Andy, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today about your new book. Congratulations on that. It just came out in July. It's called Strange.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. It's called Strange: Paranormal Realities in the Everyday World. That has to feel good to have a book come out because you work so hard on it. And then finally it's out there for everybody to read.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, it's one of quite a few books that I've written over the years, but this one, I have to say, is especially close to my heart because it, in many ways, it's a culmination of literally 3.5 decades of talking to people who have had paranormal experiences. And I've been using it, I've been drawing on that knowledge and all the people I've spoken to for years, but I thought, you know what? It's actually time to tell their stories fully, let them have their voice. And it's what I'm trying to do is to reach out to people and say, listen, you are not the only ones. Now, I know that people that listen to your show, they're already open to this. There's a lot of people out there who are afraid of talking about ghosts or hauntings or psychic phenomena. They're afraid because they think they will be ridiculed. And sometimes they're
it's
right.
True.
And therefore they don't share it. But then we get a false version of the world. And I'm saying, be brave, get out there, get the stories out there, and you'll find there's many more people out there just like you.
You wrote in the book, you said most people with paranormal tales don't want fame or notoriety. They just want to tell someone about they witnessed to be heard. I could not agree with that more.
Yes, you're so right. Because we don't live in a society, sadly, where people do get hurt all the time. And I think that's why a lot of people rant and rave on social media, just because it is a voice. I think in conversation, we've got quite bad at closing people down if they're saying something that we don't understand. And of course, we've been conditioned for many years to laugh at the paranormal, to close that conversation down. And so, yeah, people understandably, they think twice before they tell somebody about it. And yeah, I mean, I've discovered so many like really normal, ordinary people are having these really strange experiences, hence the title of the book. When you actually peel that top layer off, you begin to realize, well, these are just the people I've spoken to. Mm-hmm. So if you look at it on a global level, this must be happening far more than anybody is acknowledging.
And, you know, here we are. I'm in the middle of the U.S. You're in England. You have experiences there. We have them here. It's universal across the world. These things are happening to people that we can't explain. I don't really know what happened. All I know is that it did happen. I interviewed a psychic once, and she said, when it comes to people who are skeptics, it's because they never had the experience. So how can they believe in something they've never experienced? And I absolutely agree with that. But I think that because they haven't experienced it, they dismiss those of us who have.
Well, I think that's partially true. The only thing that I found weird is I have met people who claim to be skeptical and say, oh, I don't believe in ghosts or whatever it may be. And in the next breath, they'll tell you their ghost story. And you go, well, hold on a minute, but you've just said you're a skeptic. And they'll say, oh, yes, well, I can't explain it, but I'm sure there is a good explanation. And you think, well, no, there isn't, not in your skeptical world. And that's how they rationalize it. So, yeah, sometimes they're in, I think, a big form of denial.
That is so true. I can't tell you how many times that's happened to me, because they'll find out I do paranormal podcasting and they kind of like roll their eyes like, oh, yeah, that's a thing. But then they'll go on to tell me the most paranormal experience. I'll be like, yeah, but, you know, one time. And then they'll tell me this experience. And I'm like, well, how do you explain that then? Like, what did happen to you? Do you really believe that happened? You know, yes, and so I just find that very funny that they don't believe in it, yet they've had experiences themselves. I think because they can't explain it, do you feel like it kind of scares people a little bit because they can't explain it? They don't know what happened to them, so that unsettles them?
I think it's twofold. So I think the hardened skeptics who work in, say, a scientific field, I think they've just got stuck in their wall of peer review. Their paradigm is narrow and they can't break out of it, because if they do, and if they accept the reality of the strange world of, you know, supernatural goings on, it means they've got to say they've been wrong about everything that they've been talking about for years, on which their careers are based. So I think they have just solidly decided, I will never believe what those people over there believe, which makes them immovable and it makes them very irritating. And I actually open the book, the strange book, by recounting a few times where I've been giving a talk and somebody's got up and they're a hardcore skeptic and they've literally attacked me, not physically, but verbally in front of the whole room, because they're so threatened and there is a fear in them. But the fear for them is not that it's real, but that, you know, the fear is that somebody is, in their view, trying to teach the world about dark age, crazy, supernatural, superstitious stuff that we should have left behind long ago. And that seems to shake them for some reason. So you've got that aspect. But yes, you're right. I think certainly for everyday people, and there are people in my family that I won't name that are a bit like this, they kind of know there is the paranormal and the supernatural out there. But yeah, it unsettles them to think that they might be living in a room where, who knows, there could be a presence or some ghost passing through one day. That's not comfortable for some people. So they'd rather not think about it. And I think that's why often they will go, oh, well, you know, I'm sure there's a good explanation for the weird thing that I just saw. But it's a way of not really wanting to confront the fact that maybe the universe is a lot stranger than we thought it was.
You know, and you just made me think about how strange the world is right now, because there can be something that can be 100% true, but through social media and fake news and things, people will believe something that's 100% not true. And you can discount that and prove that to them. That did not happen. And here's evidence. But you can't change your minds on it. You know, there's families torn apart by that because, you know, parents believe this, kids believe that. You know, when you think about the paranormal, how can you convince somebody who doesn't want to be convinced? You can't, really.
No, but I think that's true of everything. In fact, my previous book was called The New Heretics, and it was all about why do people question authority? Why do they question orthodoxy? And even if you don't agree with them, how can we have sensible conversations? And I realized just through the people that I've met over the years, I've researched conspiracies and all of this, that in the end, people choose their truths. Certainly now they do. So science is not respected in the way that it used to be. So they decide, what would I like to be true? Yes, that will do. And then they'll defend that truth that they've decided on. They may be right, they may be wrong. I'm not saying they're always wrong. However, I think that's the problem. And now, and we see this on the global stage, you've got a lot of people fighting each other over truths that they have decided rather than our actual truths. But of course, they would then say, your actual truth, I challenge that. And sometimes they're right here. That's the problem. So we live in a world now where it's actually really hard to get to the bottom of what the truth of something is. But when it comes to the paranormal, what I argue, and I say this in the book, is when you put together all these different experiences happening to so many different people, the pattern, the repeating pattern of these events is so strong. It is so obvious. In my view, it is now impossible to deny that it does exist, that there is something that does not have an instant mundane explanation.
How did you get interested in the paranormal? Is this something that goes way back when you were younger, or maybe you had an experience you couldn't explain? How did you become interested in it?
I did have some strange experiences when I was young, but it's a funny thing. That didn't really set me necessarily at that time on the path of pursuing that kind of thing. It was a little bit later. I was in my late 20s, and I was open to anything mysterious, but I found crop circles when I was in the West Country of England one year. Now, crop circles are very controversial. They are these shapes that keep appearing in the fields, and there's all kinds of arguments about them, but they are there. They're still there, still going on. But that particular time, I mean, there were so many of them. Every direction you looked, there was another crop circle, this huge thing in the field. And I was completely blown away. And something in the pit of my stomach just made me think, hang on, I have got to know more about this. And I discovered that there were people researching them. And, you know, they were back then pre-internet in its full form. They were gathering and having networks and societies. And so I became a part of all that. And before I knew it, I actually became kind of this as a very, public, overt crop circle researcher. And I've written a lot of books about it and run websites about it. And that really was the trigger point, because it made me realize the way the media talked about crop circles, right? Whatever you think about them, whether you think they're made by people or aliens or natural forces or whatever, right? That's sort of by the by. The media misrepresented them, and they still misrepresent them. And I suddenly thought, well, hang on, if something as simple as a pattern in a field is getting misrepresented, presumably they must be misrepresenting anything seen as paranormal. And indeed, over the years, that is what I have discovered. And so I kind of found myself feeling a sense of injustice and been out there trying to fight to put the other side and tell people, well, yeah, but hang on, are you aware of this? Would you like to talk about this evidence? And so that's what I do, really. Just to try to get conversations going, not telling anybody what they should believe, because that doesn't work anyway.
No.
But to open up the conversation.
After all of your experiences and you got interested in the paranormal, there are tons of anecdotes and stories in the book.
Oh, yes.
Did you meet these people over the years at your talks? And, you know, and like what happens with me, people will say, you know, Carol does a paranormal podcast, and people kind of come out of the woodwork to tell me their story. Does that happen to you as well?
So, yes, it does. But I've had a sort of a lucky experience in a way, because I've started to be asked to come and give talks about crop circles. I never planned it. People said, hey, I've heard you're into this. Do you want to come and talk to my, you know, community group or whatever? And it was like, oh, okay. But before I knew it, of course, there I was giving talks. And then I discovered there were other things I was interested in that I also wanted to speak about. And it went from there. So some of it's paranormal and mysterious. Others, history. I'm being very interested in English history and folklore, for instance. So I give a lot of talks and meet a lot of people. But when they would hear me speaking about the paranormal very openly in front of a group, trying to make it very accessible to them, of course, you know, when they've seen somebody up there talking about it, they know that if they come up at the end and share something with me or email me a bit later, I'm not going to ridicule them. And they're right. You know, I can't ever know whether what happened to them really did or not. But you can soon see in somebody's eyes when, you know, they're telling you something that's true. And they trust me to do it. And it comes back to what you were saying earlier. Yeah, people have this need to share because often they can't, or they've tried and the family have laughed at them, or people have told them they're mad. But when they know somebody isn't going to do that, I think that is a very, it's a very opening experience, and it can change your life when somebody actually will hear you out. So I've got a cross section of people who are not necessarily into the paranormal, but they've had an experience or more than one experience that suddenly they feel they can share because they found me. So that's opened it up because, yes, people do contact me because I research the paranormal, but not always. It might be that first day they saw me speak, it's the first person they've ever heard openly speaking about it. And so you get a very fresh, a very real view of the human race. And that's what I try to convey in the book. Look, this is a cross-section of people that we haven't really heard from before. These are not paranormal researchers. They're just normal people. And the paranormal is occurring to them really regularly.
I think, too, it's gotten easier to talk about it a little bit because, you know, there are so many TV shows about the paranormal, lots of YouTube channels, you know, people researching the paranormal more. But I remember when I was a child, I lived in a haunted house. I didn't know any different. I was very young when we moved into that house. I was seven. I didn't know a dang thing about the paranormal. I didn't even know what that word was. All I knew was there's somebody walking around the house every night. You know, they're going up and down the stairs. Things are moving in the house. There's just this whole weird thing happening. But I also kept it to myself because I didn't want my friends to know what was going on. As I've gotten older, I don't care who knows. You know,
no one knows. Good.
But I think that when you're experiencing something, you don't want people to think you're crazy. So you don't share it with them, and you select who you find the safe place where you can share the story.
I think especially at school age, you probably did the right thing, because if somebody finds out you live in a haunted house, you're going to get a lot of criticism and people laughing and making fun of you. You know, that's not something I think that you're equipped to deal with as a child. So, yeah, I can understand why it wouldn't be shared. And to be fair, I can also understand to a degree why if you do have a presence or something going on in your house, you don't want to shout too loudly about it because, A, people might not want to come round to your house. Never mind the ridicule aspect. B, if you ever try to sell it, it could be a problem. So again, I find people play it down, even though, like yourself, I've heard of so many people that hear the same things going around in a routine. Right. They hear, you know, the same actions. It's like either something's got stuck in a groove, time has got stuck in a groove, or there is a spirit that for some reason is compelled to do the same things. And sometimes they see them, sometimes they just hear them. And in the end, I think like yourself, most people learn to live with it. Some can't. And they get out of there. Although sometimes, as you probably know, ghosts can follow. Mm-hmm. It's not just the house. They can shoot into people and they'll come with you. And maybe we'll talk about that in a minute. But on the whole, yeah, I think most people learn to live with it. And it might be unsettling, but as long as it's not harmful and a really dark entity, I think they usually find a way to, you know, just rub along with it and hope that it doesn't get any worse.
When you started to write the book, how did you decide the categories and how to structure the book? Because you do talk about everything from out-of-body experiences, UFOs, crop circles, attachments, you know, ghosts of loved ones, you know, all of those psychic experiences, all of those sorts of things. How hard was it to arrange the book in a way where you could include everything?
It was actually really easy. So I don't want people to think that it's just an empty compendium of lots of things all shoved in a Baron's Dirt.
It's organized very well. It reads very easily.
Thank you. Well, there's a narrative to it. It tells a bigger story. And so how I structured it was to say, what are the things that I hear the most? And I give in the paranormal top 10. And you can easily make a list, or I can, of the kinds of stories people tell me the most. So number one on the list is ghosts, without any question. Number two, poltergeists, which I know can be different, but I found they're also related very often, but and so on. And then UFOs is number three, for instance. So now there's many kinds of UFOs, and we probably won't say too much today about this, but it is happening, whatever it might be, or on a grand scale to an awful lot of people. And of course, that's been getting a lot more publicity of late. But what you then find is, so then you sort of get past all of that, and then you start to talk about psychic phenomena, out-of-body experiences, and things like that. And you realize they're related, and they're related to ghosts. And the overarching picture that, in the end, the book pulls together is, actually, the universe is leaky. It is not predictable. It's clearly got lots of holes and tears in it, and things go backwards and forwards through those holes and tears, and we call them either ghosts or angels or aliens, and sometimes they might be all of those things or none of them or all of them at the same time. And when you start to, you know, hear scientists talking about the multidimensional universe and then quantum entanglement and all of these things that are recognized scientific principles, I certainly conclude, well, actually, the paranormal, which is what we call it, and all that means is beyond the normal, it's kind of inevitable, really, rather than it being some unusual aberration. It's a wonder it doesn't happen more often, given how weird the universe is. So the book tells a story, and by the time you get to the end, all these things that you begin with thinking might be separate, you realize they're not. And they come together, and there is a bigger picture. And at the end, I look at where's the future of this, and how might things like AI, for all the bad side of it, actually help us to research this and discover the way the universe works. So hopefully by the other end of it, you've come out with a much bigger picture, but equally you've really enjoyed all the tales or the anecdotes that have happened to real people. And hopefully a lot of people go, well, that's what happened to me. Thank God I'm not alone, you know.
A book like yours in these paranormal shows makes people feel like they're not alone. They've had this experience. They can't explain it, but other people have had it. And what's interesting to me is, like, as I read the book, there are so many stories in there. You've talked to so many different people that have had experiences that I can personally relate to. Didn't have that exact experience, but I had a similar experience. Or on our other podcast, Real Ghost Stories Online, there are so many stories I've heard that people who don't know each other, live in totally different places, have had such similar experiences. You know, it might be a visit from a loved one. It might be, you know, and you bring it up in the book. I always find these so fascinating, where someone sees a person at the moment of their death, and they're convinced they've seen that person, but there's no way they could have. And I find those stories to be so compelling, because there's through lines to these stories. They're similar, yet different experiences, but a very similar experience happening to totally different people.
Definitely. I mean, that side of things where people meet a friend or a relative at the very second that they were being killed somewhere or dying, but the person that sees them doesn't know that, it's shockingly common. And they go, hello, what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. And they'll have a conversation. It's like normal. And then the person goes, and the person left behind thinks, that's weird. Why did they drop in today? And then they learn a bit later that they were killed or they died, and it was that exact moment. It's almost like we have a moment, not everyone clearly, but when you cross between this existence and whatever's beyond, you sometimes get a little moment to just tie up a few loose ends. And we don't know how time works for the people that are in that strange bubble, but it's almost like they think, yeah, you know what? I really wanted to just say hello to so-and-so. I don't want to frighten them, so I'll just go and have a normal conversation. And it's one of the most bizarre, and yet I think one of the most beautiful things. And something that I'm really keen to draw out in the strange book is that, I mean, yes, of course, all of this can be spooky, but a lot of it's often really wonderful. It's very life-affirming. Sometimes it's funny. And some people have had the most wonderful experiences. And yet, you know, the mainstream media always boils it down to kind of dark and spooky. And you mention the word paranormal, they'll show you a picture of a graveyard with some kind of spooky creature in the mist. You know, it's too, that annoys me. Yes, all right, there is that aspect. But I'm trying to say it's not always like that. And often these things are really normal. You don't, like we've just said, you don't even know that you've seen a ghost. It just was like meeting anybody anywhere, any day. And that's, in a way, I think, more fantastic than any other manifestation.
I do find the stories about the visitations from loved ones, whether it be in a dream or signs that you get from that loved one or whatever it might be, I find those to be very profound. And that kind of connection, like they've passed away, but I'm still kind of here, even just a touch from beyond, and maybe you won't ever have another experience, but you had that one.
Yes.
And I find those just to be so touching. Those are my favorite stories.
Well, again, what is wonderful about that is it's an act of love. To come back and reassure someone, it's like the ultimate act of love. They've actually made the effort to cross back briefly. And mostly, it doesn't last long. It tends to be in the immediate hours or days where you see them. Now, not always, it can go on a bit longer and sometimes more repetitive, but on the whole, it tends to be just a simple message of reassurance, and people do get reassurance from it. And it is an absolutely fantastic thing. But the more that you hear about people having these conversations, the more I get annoyed, and I take issue with this in the book, where I read reductive scientists and medical people saying, well, it's just in the mind. You've lost someone you love. Well, of course you wanted to see them. And they have this condescending tone. And it's like, well, you imagined you saw them. I take such issue with that because often the circumstances that these happen in don't allow for that. Sometimes more than one person sees the apparition. And, you know, the point I always make is, look, I've lost loved ones in my life much earlier than they should have gone. But I didn't see them, and I believe in this stuff. I would have loved to have seen them. I'm thinking, come and say goodbye, and they didn't. So I don't think just the act of wanting something to happen will necessarily make it so. And I really, I'll combat the skeptics on that one.
I absolutely agree with you on that, because same with me. If I've had some friends who have passed who I would have loved to have that connection with, and it never happened. I've had other friends where I had very profound experiences after they passed, and my father after he passed. But there was other people I honest to God thought, if anyone can get through to me, it's him, and nothing. So if you can't will it, it can't just happen because you want it to. And I wish I knew the answers to that.
I think, what I conclude in the book is I think you need several cogs to click into the right position to have a supernatural experience. Sometimes it seems easy. And also, not everybody, as you know, is tuned in the same way. So you can believe in something, but it doesn't mean you're going to see ghosts. Whereas somebody else that doesn't even seem that bothered by that kind of thing keep seeing them. It's a frequency thing, and we're not all like that. I mean, that's, again, sorry to keep going on about skeptics, but they'll say, oh, well, we've done laboratory experiences or experiments, rather, and we've never been able to recreate X, Y, and Z. Well, how could they even think they would? There's so many circumstances, frames of mind, frequencies, whatever, that all have to come together at that split second for it to happen. And just wanting it to happen isn't necessarily, sadly, going to make it happen. So, yeah, I think the paranormal, it's it's very common, but I don't think it's predictable, which is annoying, because it would be nice to be able to show that it is, and then you can prove to all the scientists that it is real. But yet that unpredictability is, of course, what makes it so fascinating all at the same time.
It seems like there are, you could categorize the different experiences as well, which you do in the book. You kind of group them into chapters. So you could have visits from loved one. There can be poltergeist experiences. There can be attachments. There can be kind of a time slip experience. So there's so many different experiences that you can have that differ from one experience to the next.
Well, yes. And I mean, the time slip phenomenon I find particularly fascinating. Now, you could argue that if you see a ghost that just isn't aware of you and looks like it's getting on with whatever it would have got on with within its normal life, that you might just be literally having a time slip, or the ghost is. You're just seeing a moment in time that for some reason re-triggers sometimes. There are other kinds that I think are spirits that clearly have conscious awareness of where they are. But, I mean, we can time slip. So there's a story in the book. So when you get towards the end, there's a chapter where I just call it bizarre happenings, where I just wasn't sure how to categorize this. And yet these stories need to be shared. And there was a chap called Tony, who I knew well. So he was the uncle of a close friend of mine. He's sadly no longer with us. But in the 1960s, he worked as a van driver or a truck driver in London. And he was making his deliveries one day, and he got to a street that he was very familiar with, and he thought, it's a bit weird. Everybody's all wearing, like, Edwardian or Victorian costume, and there were, like, very early cars there and horses coming through the street. And he stopped the van and thought, they must be making a film or something, you know, a movie. And then he realised there was no cameras, nothing. He was looking at reality, and somehow he concluded, and I think he's right, that he'd just somehow driven back in time by many decades and was seeing the street as it was back in probably the early 1900s. And he said he had the strongest urge to get out of the car or out of the truck because he wanted to experience it. But he said, I knew if I did, I might never get back. That the very act of entering that world, I might be trapped there forever. And so he had to sort of force himself not to get out. And then gradually it faded away and the street went back to normal. So that's a classic time slip. And I've heard other stories like that, but that is a very strong one. And so, yeah, again, time and space is leaky. And I think sometimes these things can happen and then normality restores. I mean, it might be just something that happens occasionally, and you're lucky if it happens to you. But yeah, when I meet people like that, people I knew and trusted, I see no reason to disbelieve any element of that story.
We had a time slip story just this week on our other show, where a woman was driving in her old neighborhood, looked up and saw her friend's house the way it was before they painted it, what it looked like 15 years ago. She saw the friend's little brother on his bike, who's now in his 20s. And in what she saw, he was about 10, and she recognized him from that age. Sure. He's still alive. You know, it wasn't like he had passed away or anything. And she's like, what happened to me? So she's thinking she's lost her mind. And so I think that's interesting how something like that can happen to a totally sane person just driving down the street.
Yeah, I mean, and I think we need to change this attitude, because people, sadly, they've been conditioned to think, well, I must have lost my mind, instead of actually thinking, you know what, I've heard this happen sometimes. This is the way the universe is. There's a story that I share in the book about a lady who had friends come to stay in her house. And then in the house, the friends started to see this ghost. Now, the lady hadn't seen the ghost. And they saw it regularly, just walking around, not doing much. And of course, it was very unsettling for them. But in the end, they told her, and she asked them to describe this person that they kept seeing. And they described this man in great detail. And she said, well, that's my father, and he's not dead, and he lives in America. This was in England. And she showed them the photograph of him, and they said, yeah, that's him. So She thought, "My God, I hope he hasn't died." And I haven't
Right.
heard. She telephoned him, and he answered, and he was fine. And they never got to the bottom of it. But it's like some remnant of when the father did live in their house with her for a while, some remnant of that, or some bilocation. He was in some way like doing astral projection back to that house, but didn't even know that he was. But those people staying with her could see it. Now, make of that what you will. So you can sometimes have ghosts of people who aren't even dead.
Yeah.
It's a bilocation thing. And again, I just love that. It makes me realize, oh, the universe is so deliciously, fantastically creative. I love it.
It really is.
And that's just one of many similar stories.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Andy Thomas about his new book, Strange, Paranormal Realities in the Everyday World. You can buy it wherever books are sold and get more information about Andy at his website, truthagenda.org. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. You can sign up on Apple Podcasts or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and you can find everything there all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you so much for listening.
Think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims. Sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to...
get your bag!
Two ways to peel for a chance to...
get your bag!
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to...
get your bag!
Play Monopoly at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom. When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom. When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.